Paper Friends. My name is Neil and welcome to this episode 101 of the Get Your Comic On podcast. We're here fortnightly-ish to bring you a slice of film, TV and pop culture goodness from our studios direct to your listening device. You can also now check us out on YouTube, where I am daring to record video of myself fumbling my way through this podcast. We are back from San Diego Comic-Con. We are over the 100th episode celebrations. We are over the 10-year celebrations of the Get Your Comic-Con website. And it is time to get back down to business with a slightly tweaked format version of this podcast with a brand new theme, because we have a renewed energy. Time for the second 100 episodes. This week, I am going to be going through some of the latest headlines from the worlds of film, TV, comic books, etc., etc. I'm also going to be talking to you about a film that is currently in UK cinemas that I have really enjoyed and I think absolutely needs our support at the moment, which is Warner Brothers' Blue Beetle. And if talking to the likes of Tom Taylor, Nicole Maines, Colin Kelly, Jackson Lansing over the last few weeks has not fired you up to read some comic books, then please stay tuned, because I have some recommendations for you for books that are coming out this week and are also available now, which I think that you should be reading. So without further ado, why don't we dive into the headlines and see what's going on in the world? First up in the news this week, this Saturday, the 2nd of September, will be the UK's version of National Cinema Day. So this year, over 630 venues have signed up to participate in the event, which comes hot on the heels of last year's first edition. It's actually the first UK Cinema Day that has taken place in almost 30 years. And last year saw almost 1.5 million admissions, which is around three times the normal level of people which attend UK cinemas. National Cinema Day comes hot on the heels of the release of Barbie and Oppenheimer, which, believe it or not, the release of which saw the highest level of UK weekly cinema admissions in over a decade. So not just pre-pandemic we're talking here, but Barbie and Oppenheimer was the busiest weekend or week in cinema for a decade. That's mad. This proves once again that while many still enjoy watching films on streaming and other services at home, nothing compares to the sights, sounds, and the sheer immersive experience of watching a film in its natural home, the cinema theatre. Like last year, National Cinema Day has been developed by the cross-industry body, get ready for me to try and say this, Cinema First, and is supported by the Film Distributors Association UK and the UK Cinema Association. And you'll see lots of promotion for it across the week this week leading up to Cinema Day, which is obviously happening on Saturday. So what better reason to go out and see Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, go see Barbie again, Oppenheimer, Blue Beetle, which I am going to be talking about in a minute. There is plenty to go and see. While all the evidence confirms that cinema going is amongst the most low-cost, best value for money leisure opportunity, we of course recognise that many households are still experiencing significant impacts on their finances. And so that is why this Saturday, you can visit a cinema for as little as £3 under the banner of National Cinema Day. So check your local listings when they are available for this weekend, and please do go and support local venues and cinemas across the UK, because they so deserve it. Warner Brothers has released the official trailer for the upcoming Justice League X Ruby Superheroes and Huntsmen Part 2, the sequel to the animated movie, which first released back in April with Part 1, will be coming to Blu-ray and DVD in October. So it's actually going to be hitting the US on October the 31st. We don't quite know yet whether it will be the same dates in the UK, but it most likely will be. A synopsis for Part 2 reads, on the heels of successfully escaping a deadly digital trap, the members of the Justice League emerge in their own world to discover that grim, ravenous creatures from Remnant have overtaken Earth. In order to defeat the monsters, they must call on their new friends Team Ruby for help. You will know that we interviewed the wonderful Chandler Riggs, who played Superman in Part 1 of Justice League X Ruby. This time, the Justice League heroes will be adults again, so we have a slightly different voice cast that are going to be in Part 2. The second part includes the voices of Lindsay Jones, Kara Ebel, and Aaron Zeck, as well as Barbara Dunkelman as their Team Ruby heroes, and joining them as the voices of the Justice League will be a bunch of names that I don't have on my screen, so bear with me just one second. Joining them are Jamie Chung as Black Canary, David Dasmalchian as The Flash, Laura Bailey as Wonder Woman, Troy Baker, oh yes, as Batman, and Travis Willingham, oh yes, as Superman, reprising their voices from the Super Sons film that was out just last year that we absolutely loved. So, if you are watching this podcast on YouTube, because yes, I am recording myself, as I said, fumbling through this, then I'm going to play the trailer for you right now. I will give you a snippet of audio if you are listening to this on your favourite podcast platform. Make sure to go over to our website, which is www.getyourcomiccon.co.uk, where you can check out the trailer in full.
Calling the Justice League. We need your help.
Grim. Yeah, not pretty.
There are so many of them. How did this happen so quickly?
Kilgore.
Really? Really?
I had the weirdest dream.
It wasn't a dream.
So, as we all know, the SAG and Writers Guild strikes are still going on in America, as both the writers and the actors are on picket lines, standing together in solidarity against the studios as they work to get a fair deal for them to be remunerated for all of the streaming work that they do, and we say cheers to them for the good fight. The strikes themselves have continued to have an impact, and that is what I wanted to talk about briefly now, as another big studio movie has found itself losing its 2023 release date. So Denis Villeneuve's Dune Part 2, which had originally been set to release on November 3rd, 2023, has now moved. Warner Brothers has shifted that release date to March the 15th, 2024. It's only moving back by kind of 3 months, which is probably to give the studio a bit of breathing space in the hope that they can get the actors around the table and get a deal maybe by the end of this year. But as we all know from what you can see in mainstream media, there is a very big divide between both the writers and the actors and the studios themselves. There is a lot of talk of gameplay and everything that's going on there. I don't want to get into detail about it because I am not an actor. I am not a writer in a Hollywood sense. I don't know all of the internet. You can definitely read that on websites like Deadline, Variety. You can pick up all of much more meaningful commentary on what is happening there. I just want to talk to you about release dates for now. So Dune does find itself now releasing in March of next year, and that will raise the question, I'm sure, for many of you who are listening and watching this podcast, about what will happen with Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. So there's the Jason Momoa starring James Wan directed sequel to 2018's Aquaman. That film is currently still set to release in December of 2023, as is the Timothée Chalamet starring Wonka. Those two films are currently staying put in December. They may well move if this strike does continue. Perhaps Warner Brothers is looking at November as being a time where things may be getting back to normal right now, and that's why they're not banking on having the cast of Dune maybe out to be promoting that film. So let's wait and see what happens in the next few weeks as to whether December films also shift. But for now, Dune Part 2, for which you can check out the trailer over on our website, will be releasing in cinemas on March the 15th, 2024. Stay tuned for more on that and any more impacts that we get from those strikes as the weeks continue. Now for some really exciting news from Boom Studios, as Tom King is teaming up with artist Peter Gross for a retelling of Animal Farm, the Orwellian kind of story, which they are calling Animal Pound. It's going to be releasing in December of 2020. So let me pick up on the press release, which has come from Boom on this one. So multi-Eisner winning New York Times best-selling writer Tom King, who you will know for The Human Target at DC, as well as his run on Batman and Mr. Miracle, which is just a hugely successful book. Eisner nominated industry titan Peter Gross from Lucifer and American Jesus. Eisner nominated colorist Tamara Bonvillaine, who works on Once and Future and also World's Finest. And Eisner nominated letterer Clayton Cowles, who often works with Tom King, worked with him on Strange Adventures, is also the letterer on Die. Team up for the first time at Boom Studios for a modern retelling of timeless Orwellian allegory in Animal Pound. So when animals grow tired of being caged, killed, and sold off, it's only a matter of time before they've had enough. After an uprising puts the animals in control of a pound, they quickly find themselves as comrades united against everything that walks on two legs. But with this newfound power comes a sudden challenge. How best to lay the groundwork for this new democracy? Visionaries King and Gross give us an updated version of Animal Farm for 21st century America, where a two-party system gives way to fear, fascism, and lays the... Ooh, I went back. Fear, fascism, in this can't-miss event series. So, just some of the particulars. So, Animal Pound number 1 features a main cover by Peter Gross, with variants by Yuko Shimizu, Gabriel H. Walter, Bill Sienkiewicz, Scotty Young, and more. A quote from Tom King on this book reads, "Animal Pound is the most ambitious story that I've ever told, and I feel like a fool for trying to do it. The story came to me strong, and with Peter drawing, I know we'll pull it off. We'll make something as insane, stunning, and frightful as the times that we live in." Gross added, "Tom's pitch for Animal Pound was the best pitch I've ever read, and I've read some great ones," he says. "I was instantly on board and can't wait to see it out in the world. It isn't just a comic book event, it's literally an event from our medium's boldest storytellers," says executive editor Eric Harburn. "Tom, Peter, Tamara and Clayton know the gravity of following in the footsteps of Orwell, arguably the 20th century's most prescient author." Author? "And let me tell you, they are up to the challenge." So just to kind of follow up, there is some preview art from issue number 1, which you will find up on our website. And issue number 1 will be available in comic book stores and on digital platforms from December the 20th, 2023. There's going to be an Ashcan edition that you'll be able to pick up in comic book stores from November the 15th. So that'll be like a sneaky preview of some of the artwork from within the book, but the main book itself will be available from December the 20th. We will definitely be picking up on that when it's released, because that sounds really interesting. Tom King is such an amazing writer, so it's cool to see him branching out from DC, doing something a little different, something a little political maybe. That's going to be really exciting to read. So mark that one in your calendars, December the 20th for Animal Pound number 1. Lastly this week, Apple TV has released the official trailer for the upcoming third season of The Morning Show, starring Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon. The series will return with 2 brand new episodes on Wednesday, September the 13th, 2023, and then new episodes will air every Wednesday through to the season finale, which will release on Wednesday, November the 8th, 2023. In season 3 of The Morning Show, the stakes are high as the future for the network is thrown into question and loyalties are pushed to the brink when a tech titan takes an interest in UBA. Unexpected alliances form, private truths are weaponized, and everyone is forced to confront their core values both in and out of the newsroom. Along with Witherspoon and Aniston, the star-studded season 3 ensemble cast is led by Billy Crudup, Mark Duplass, Nesta Carbonell, Karen Pittman, Greta Lee. Jon Hamm joins the cast this season. Nicole Beharie, who is... I haven't seen her in anything since Sleepy Hollow, which I absolutely loved as a show, so great to see her joining this. And the returning Juliana Margulies. The Emmy, SAG and Critics' Choice award-winning drama, which has already received an early renewal for season 4, which is very important, is showrun and executive produced by Charlotte Stroud, who takes over this season from the previous showrunner, and is directed and executive produced by Mimi Leder. The series is produced by Studio Media Res and executive produced by Michael Ellenberg through Media Res, along with Stout and Leder. Aniston and Kristen Hahn executive produced through Echo Films, and Witherspoon executive produces alongside Lauren Neustadter for Hello Sunshine. You didn't need to know that bit, but it was in the press release. It sounded good. So really looking forward to that. I loved season 1 and season 2, so I'm really interested to see where it goes in season 3, and really glad that they have a season 4 already, so we know that no matter what happens this season, there is more story to come. Hopefully that means they've crafted a story that could end with quite a banger of a cliffhanger as well, knowing that they have more episodes. If you want to check out that trailer, then do head over to our website. Again, the website address is www.getyourcomiccon.co.uk, and you can watch that trailer in full and enjoy The Morning Show when it returns, as I said, with 2 brand new episodes on September the 13th, 2023. Before we close down the newsroom this week, there's just enough time for me to remind you that if you want to keep up to date with the latest breaking news, then follow us on social media. We're on all major platforms at Get Your Comic Con. For now, let's dive in on some reviews. So the first of our reviews this episode, I want to talk to you about a film from Warner Brothers and DC, which is currently in cinemas globally, which is Blue Beetle, the latest and, I guess, second to last film of DC's current run. It's also a character that may be part of the DCU. We can talk all about that as we're diving in on this film. Before I start, I just want to say that there will be some minor spoilers, so if you haven't seen it yet, and I know some of you haven't, then please do skip ahead to the next section of the podcast. Otherwise, if you don't mind a few minor spoilers, stick around, because we're going to really dive into it. This film is doing okay at the box office. It's just had its second weekend. It fell by around 50% in the US, just under 50%, which is actually a relatively good hold for a comic book movie. At this point, we're more used to seeing comic book movies fall by 60-70% in their second weekend. So there is a strong hold for Blue Beetle, which is really I'm overjoyed at that, because it means that people have enjoyed it, people are going back to see it, more people are hearing the word of mouth and going to see it. The film is still in the mid-70s on Rotten Tomatoes. It is certified fresh. It has a really strong audience score as well. So people are liking this film, which is really, really great. But yes, please do skip if you want to avoid spoilers. So, written by Gareth Dunnet Alsosa, directed by Angel Manuel Soto, this film stars... I'm going to hopefully do okay, because this one has been stressing me out. If you've watched any of my other Blue Beetle coverage, you'll know I really want to get names right and don't want to get anything wrong. So it stars Sherla Mariduena as Jaime Reyes, who is aka the Blue Beetle, the lead. We have Bruna Marquezine as Jenny Cord, Becky G as the voice of Kajidar, Damien Alcazar as Alberto Reyes, George Lopez as Rudy Reyes, Adriana Barraza as Nana Reyes, Belisa Escobedo as Milagro, Epelida Carrillo as Rocio Reyes, Susan Sarandon as Victoria Cord, aka one of the film's villains, Harvey Grillen as Dr. Sanchez, and Rahul Max Trujillo as Carapax. I'm going to stop there. Don't want to go into anything that might reveal anybody else who's in this one. So, you want a synopsis, don't you? If you don't already know what this film's about. So an alien scarab chooses Jaime Reyes to be its symbiotic host, bestowing the recent college graduate with a suit of armor that's capable of extraordinary powers, forever changing his destiny as he becomes the superhero known as Blue Beetle. So this film was originally envisioned for HBO Max in the US. We don't know how it would have released here in the UK under that banner, but it was originally going to be for HBO Max. Then under the Warner Brothers regime before... James Gunn and Peter Safran, it was under the Walter Hamada days, it was given extra money in order to shoot in IMAX to upscale itself ready for a cinema release. So ignore anyone that says to you this film was shot for HBO Max. That is not the case. It was originally conceived for that release, but that is not how it was shot. It is so much fun. I'm not going to lie to you, there is, you know, we're not breaking any new ground in terms of storytelling here. What we are breaking ground with is that representation of a Latin family. They come from Palmera City, which is an invention of DC Comics that you can pick up on if you read the recent Blue Beetle Graduation Day miniseries by the wonderful Josh Trujillo, who is about to have a new Blue Beetle series, which is starting in a couple of weeks, that we'll be doing some coverage on. So Palmera City is a new location that's invented in first seen in that book, as is the character Victoria Cord, played by Susan Sarandon in this film. But as I was saying, this film is just wonderful for that representation, and it's great to see that family. They are so wonderful on screen. All of these actors, you know, playing Milagro, Rocio, Nana, Rudy, Alberto, are brilliant. They are brilliant together. The interplay between them is just magical. It's so much fun. But the overall story of Blue Beetle is very much what you have seen in other films. A lot of people have kind of said this in reviews, but there are similarities to Spider-Man Homecoming in that this is a young character. He is slightly older in this film. He is 22. He's a recent college graduate. Whereas in the comics, if you go back and read the kind of origin of Jaime, he is more like 15, 16. So they have aged him up slightly to bring him away from that Tom Holland Spider-Man. But in terms of the vibe around this film, it is somewhere between that kind of Spider-Man Homecoming youthful energy and that corporate espionage suit of armor of the first Iron Man film in many ways. But you can tell by the way I'm smiling, there's just something about the heart and the core and the excitement of the cast in this film, the writing, the direction, that makes it really, really fun to watch. So let's just start with Sherla Mariduena first. Many of you will know him from Cobra Kai on Netflix. This is not a series that I have watched, so he was really new to me. He was not somebody who I was particularly familiar with, and I think he did a really wonderful job of breathing life into Jaime. He is funny, but he is very, very heartfelt in his performance. You can see early in the film his connection to the family is really what inspires him in everything that he does. He is that first of his family to go to college. He is the one who wants to give back to the family for everything that they have given him. He's the one that wants to help pull them out of the What's the word I'm looking for? He wants to kind of elevate them from where they are living at the moment, to give them everything that he feels that they deserve. Not because there is anything wrong with where they are, it's just that he has such a dedicated and unwavering love for his family that he wants to do right by them. And that is the driving force for so much of this film. Everything else that happens is kind of consequential to that, which is why the family aspect and the family dynamic is so important to the whole story of the film. So what you will know of from having seen trailers and everything else is that Jaime will come into contact with Jenny Cord, who is the daughter of Ted Cord, one of the legendary Blue Beetles from DC Comics, who I guess it's probably safe to say has the longest run as the Blue Beetle, because Jaime was first introduced in 2006, whereas Ted was introduced in something like 1966, 1964, something like that. So Ted was around for a long, long time before Jaime. So there's a whole lot of history and legacy that comes with even having Jenny in this film. So Jenny and Jaime come across each other. That is how he comes into possession of the Scarab and becomes the Blue Beetle. Now, I'm sure there will be some people that will find that the way the family is involved once Jaime has the Scarab and the story begins to move on and how deeply involved they are in the story may come across as difficult to move on from if you were to make sequels in future films, because there is a lot of involvement with the family in the third act. Nana in particular, who is a fan favourite character. You have seen her in the trailer toting a machine gun. And, you know, there is a reason for that. There is a lot that is going on in the story that means that the family is really deeply involved in that third act battle. Although, when it comes down to kind of hero versus main villain, it really is just the Blue Beetle and Carapax. But I guess in a similar respect to the Shazam movies, there is kind of a Blue Beetle family vibe here. They are heroes in their own story. And that is really, again, wonderful to see, because it fits with what the writers and Angel Manuel Soto is doing as the director, in centering everything so much on that family vibe. But it does narratively, apart from being fun to watch on screen, it does offer some potential difficulties for how Blue Beetle is to act as a kind of solo hero going forwards, because he has that safety net of his family very, very much here. But it's sort of almost a flip of what he wanted, in that they are the ones that kind of elevate him in the end. So it's complex, and it's maybe narratively a little problematic moving forwards, but for what you are watching in Blue Beetle, it's wonderful to watch. There's a lot of action in here, but it does take a little while for it to get going. We do take time to introduce each of the characters, to set up the dynamic of Palmyra City, which is very much a city owned and run by Cord Industries. Ted Cord is missing, and that's something that is picked up on in the mid-credit scene in the film. So the company is being run by Victoria Cord, played by Susan Sarandon, who is doing her best mustache-twirling villain. And so there is that kind of rich side of the tracks, poor side of the tracks scenario, where Palmyra City has this really shining beacon cityscape full of companies, which you will see, which do some wonderful world building for DC. So Cord is there, LexCorp is there, Ace Chemicals is there. A lot of familiar names from DC Comics exist in this city, but there is this huge divide between the local families who've been driven out and across the river, who live in the Palmyra Keys, and then the rich folk who live in the city. And that's a dynamic which very much plays out across throughout kind of everything in the film as well, in that it's kind of the haves and the have-nots. And that does add into some of the kind of cultural aspects of the film as well, in that, you know, this family is looking to lose their home because of this huge corporation that's pushing them out, etc., etc. So it really does, in the first act, build up not just the family characters, but the perspective that the family have on Cord Industries and what they are doing. And so it sort of builds up the villain through this evil corporation empire kind of scenario. So there is some political and cultural commentary there on the kind of I don't want to call them faceless, because Victoria is obviously very much character, but that kind of big name corporation comes into big city, pushes out the locals. There's a lot there about what Latin culture has been through. And I don't want to say and comment too much on that because clearly, white man, I am not as well versed in that as, you know, somebody who is of that culture. But there's a strong story there, which I think that the Latin culture will really connect with. And we as a, you know, people like me as a white audience will watch, and there is something to learn from this other than just watching a superhero movie. Let's talk about some of the wider aspects of the film. Action sequences was where I started before I just peered down that road. There are some really great set pieces in this film. It's very, very hand-to-hand combat, and it is very practical, especially early in the film. There are some wonderful practical fight sequences between Carapax and Blue Beetle where, you know, you're really seeing actors on wires, practical suits, and that's really cool. A lot of these movies, these big comic book movies these days, just disappear into green screen and CGI. And yes, there are obviously a lot of big CGI moments in this film. You know, Blue Beetle does fly up into space. The third act battle does feature some amazing weapons that are conjured by Kajidao and the Blue Beetle suit, and Carapax being completely taken over by OMAC, which is a big one for DC fans, and where that leads. But in terms of the hand-to-hand combat, there is some really great practical stuff here, and that's really, really fun to see. And that, yes, is a consequence of a lower budget and originally being conceived for HBO Max, but my God, how awesome is it to see a superhero movie actually remembering to be practical for once? It just looks so much more tangible on screen, and you can feel the punches and you can feel the impacts when Jaime is thrown through a truck, and it just is... It's so wonderful to see that. I had kind of forgotten how much I enjoy seeing practical effects. And so seeing that here, although it does make you realize that it's lower scale, is just really exciting to see for me. And that's one of the reasons why I think this film works so well in comparison to other comic book movies that we've had this year. You know, if you look at Quantumania, which is, okay, not a film I enjoyed as much, but is just a huge CGI mess in many respects, and you look at The Flash, which has issues with its special effects, albeit through this really great story, and it is so heavily stylized in the things that you see, particularly when you're inside the Speed Force. This film just strips all of that away. You know, there's no mention of the word multiverse. There are no multiple versions of characters. You are simply stripping away everything that comic book movies have become so overly convoluted with to tell something which is much more pure and much more character driven. And that is not just in story. Like I was just saying, the reason that I've got to this point is because everything is stripped back. The effects are stripped back. The fights are stripped back. The story is stripped back. And because of that, it just functions so much better and feels like... It's difficult to say this without it sounding like almost being a criticism, which it's not meant as, but it's like going back to an earlier period of comic book storytelling before we had the MCU as it is now, and before we had what will be the DCU and what has been the DCEU. Because you kind of have to remember that the reason that we got to this point with the two big studios is because we had so many great standalone movies that people suddenly thought, wouldn't it be great if these characters mixed together? But you have to remember that before you can mix, you have to have a strong character base. And that is exactly what Blue Beetle is. A very strong introduction, purely focused on that character, purely focused on building the world around him, adding potential opportunities for wider world building just because you've seen the name Ace Chemicals. It has nothing to do with the plot of this film, but that doesn't mean it can't be part of a plot for another film. And you'll think, oh, do you know what? They exist in Palmyra as well. That's where I saw that first. Or Luther Corp could be a very important part of Superman Legacy. Means nothing to Blue Beetle, but you see that logo there. It exists in that world. That world building is done. It's subtle. It's exactly how it should have been all along. And so... that's why I love it. I just love it because it simply doesn't want to do anything other than tell a fun story around Jaime and around the Blue Beetle and this wonderful family. When the film does use special effects, they're really, really good. Obviously, a lot of people complained about the special effects in The Flash, which I don't want to compare it to The Flash because they're two very, very different movies. But in terms of Warner Brothers releases, there's no denying the fact that this has the better quality of special effects. On top of all of that practical work that I just talked about, there are some really, really great effects, big effects moments where Jaime is up in space, when he is... I nearly said something quite spoilery. There's a moment later in the film where he is kind of, let's say, unconscious and dreaming about something, and his dreamscape is very, very well realized and very highly stylized, but looks great and is, again, it's... Okay, it's less tangible than seeing him thrown through a practical set piece, but it still looks really well on screen. It's really well rendered, so that's great. There were maybe a couple of moments where it was obviously CGI, but in terms of where I personally have talked about comic book movies appearing to be really, really kind of rubbery and just not working for me, I didn't have any of those moments in this film, which was really, really great. I need to just double-check the name of the composer, because the score is really cool. It sounds similar-ish in a way to the score for Black Adam. There is a similarity there in terms of the kind of electronic underneath a kind of booming score. You can hear that, I'm losing my voice. It was composed by Bobby Krillick, I hope I pronounced that correct, under the Hacks and Cloak. I don't know that name. But it's a really, really cool score, and it's also available now. So please do go and check it out, because it's really, really fun. And the music that's included in this film as well, there are familiar songs, but they are Spanish language versions, which is really, really fun. And again, ties into that wonderful Latin culture that is underpinning everything in this film. I think that's all I want to say about Blue Beetle. I don't think I want to say any more, because I think I feel like I've rambled quite a bit. You can read Matt's review over on the website. He gave the film 4 stars when he got to go and see it while I was away in San Diego, and absolutely loved it. Let's just talk about credits for a moment, actually. So there is a mid-credit scene which does have ties to Ted Kord and the legacy of the Blue Beetle character, and that could easily tie into some of James Gunn's plans for the DCU. We know he has said that Blue Beetle is one of the core characters of the DCU. He hasn't said whether that's the Jaime version, the Ted version, but there is a lot there that this film could set up for the future purely in that one scene. Again, which is great. It's just a tease, which could lead somewhere. There is also a post-credit scene, but you don't necessarily need to hang around for that. It's just a nod back to something earlier in the film. Think of it as being similar as a post-credit scene to Spider-Man Homecoming, when you got to see another clip of Captain America doing his PE lesson thing. So it's there, it's fun, but it's not hugely important. That is all I'm going to say about Blue Beetle. Personally, I would give this a 4 out of 5 as well, were I the one to be writing the review. There are things that I would change and improve, but overall, it's just a really fun superhero origin story. So I implore you to absolutely go check this one out while it is still in cinemas. It is in cinemas in the UK and globally now. And yeah, Blue Beetle. Really can't wait to see more from Jaime. Can't wait to see more from Jaime Reyes, Shola Maradona in this role. And I think that if there was to be a sequel, I would like to see Angel come back and direct again, because I thought he did a really good job. So now I want to bring some comic books back to this podcast. It's in the name, so you know, fundamentally it should be here. But I am bringing you to Comics Corner, which is why this is by me, so that we can talk about a couple of books. I want to talk about a book which is available this week, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about something which is coming up soon. And so I'm starting with a book which is available now on digital platforms and in comic book stores, written by Chip Zdarsky, Teenie Howard, and Matthew Rosenberg, and featuring artwork by Mike Hawthorne, Adriano Di Benedetto, Jorge Jimenez, Nico Leon, and I really hope I get this right, Nicola Cismegia. And that is Batman Catwoman, The Gotham War. This is a brand new crossover event masterminded by Chip, Teenie, and Matthew, which is crossing over both the Batman and Catwoman titles, coming out of the events of the Night Terrors crossover event, which has happened. So as you will remember, if you have been reading Batman and Catwoman, going into Night Terrors, both of these characters were kind of not in the same place anymore. So we've been through this kind of period where Bruce and Selina have been kind of playing as a married couple and have been getting along and all has been okay. But things in Gotham have been really heating up. Selina has kind of gone back on her ways a little bit, has spent a little bit of time in prison, is now back out on the streets, has a very new perspective as to what's going on in Gotham, and that puts her very much at odds with Bruce and his mission as Batman. And again, if you've been following Night Terrors, the Night Terrors Catwoman issues, which you should really check out if you've not read them, gave Selina a very specific and very, very clear motivation in what she's doing now. So she dreamed, in her nightmare, she dreamed about a Gotham where Batman technically had kind of not existed or didn't exist to the degree that he does in the real world. And that due to her actions, she had created a city which was absolutely in chaos and needed a hero. And that has led her to this point where she feels that she has to do something to try and save the city. But what she wants to do isn't necessarily what Bruce would do to save the city. And that puts them very much at odds and kicks off what is the Gotham War that is starting this week with this brand new issue. So let me give you an official synopsis for this issue first before we talk about it a little bit more. So this first chapter is called Battle Lines, and the synopsis is: crime is down in Gotham City, but could that be a bad thing? A coordinated effort in Gotham has led to a reduction in violent crime, but at what cost? Villains scatter as their lives begin to crumble under a new regime, and as Batman recovers from his epic battle through the multiverse and the horrors of Night Terrors, one name runs through his mind. One name at the heart of this new, safer Gotham: Catwoman. A conflict that's been brewing for well over a year finally hits the streets, and it will fracture the Bat family as war erupts. From best-selling writers Chip Zdarsky, Tini Howard, and artist Mike Hawthorne and Adriano Di Benedetto comes the opening shot in the Gotham War. Just to give you a checklist on this one, so it starts this month with this particular issue that I'm talking about right now. Continues in September in Batman number 137 and Catwoman number 57. It also continues in the Gotham War Red Hood number 1. And then it comes to a close in October with Batman 138, Catwoman 58, Red Hood number 2, and Batman Catwoman The Gotham War Scorched Earth number 1. So there is some really interesting setup in this book. It starts out... it's very cinematic. So it starts out with a crook who receives a mysterious invite from a cat, no less, to go to a specific address in Gotham for no apparent reason. All we know about him is that he is a goon for hire and that he has been invited to something. So is it a new job? Is it, you know, one of the master criminals of Gotham? I mean, the cat might give it away. looking to hire him for something. We don't really know. It's very mysterious. And from there, we pick up separately with both Bruce and Selina to kind of... reset the status quo following Night Terrors. So Bruce wakes up from a very, very long nap to find out that he has been cared for by Leslie Tompkins and Oracle, who are now aware, spoiler alert by the way, that he lost his hand during the final arc before Night Terrors. So not only is Chip Zdarsky kind of closing off his last arc pre-Night Terrors, but he's kind of picking up from Night Terrors as well. So we're pulling from all of the story over the last sort of 12 months or so. And then we pick up with a crime. So Batman suits up and there is a crime in progress in Gotham, just a simple smash and grab in a museum. But it's Catwoman who is the one that stops that crime, which is where this kind of prologue to the story really starts to say, okay, this is something slightly different. And it sort of snowballs from there and we get to see what it is that's been going on in Gotham recently, that crime is down by roughly 75%. And we learn why that is. So I don't want to spoil too much. So I don't want to say too much about why that is. But the reason why violent crime is down leads to a very interesting meeting between the Bat Family and Selina Kyle. That is very much the inciting incident of this storyline and at the heart and core of this book. And what it does is Selina poses her question for how to manage Gotham City going forwards and how she thinks that crime and criminals should be handled in Gotham. And there are members of the Bat Family who agree with her. There are members who don't. There are members who side with Bruce, who is very much on mission. You know, there should be no crime. Crime should be eradicated. And that kind of moral question is what begins to push characters apart. It questions perspectives and it questions morals and judgments that each of the Bat family have. And, you know, we're talking about Damien, we're talking about Barbara, we're talking about Tim, Kate Kane is there, Jason Todd is there, you know, all the key members of the Bat family are there, and each of them has something to say about what Bruce and Selina both have as their opposing viewpoints. And that really pushes us through the rest of this book, where we start to see further consequences of what Selina is doing and how Bruce's reaction to that sparks this really major conflict between the two of them. And it's really interesting. It is quite different to what we have seen in recent stories. And is really beautifully rendered by Mike Hawthorne's pencils, Adriano Di Benedetto's inks, and Romulo Fajardo Jr.'s colours. The book is very much rooted in Gotham and the Bat family world, Detective Comics, Batman, all of that. And Teeny and Chip's stories meld together really well. I don't know how they broke up writing this. I don't know if they wrote it together. I don't know if they took certain pages. There's no sort of discernible way to know that by reading it. It very much flows and looks great in that respect, and is a really tantalizing prologue for what is to come. I have only read this issue. There are other ones which are available on my review portal that I could kind of jump ahead and read, but I'm not there yet. I am very much rooted in this issue and trying to understand exactly where I think it's going to go from here. But I think it's going to be a very exciting kind of event over the next few weeks, which feels like a classic Gotham event, kind of like the War Drums gang war that saw the death of Stephanie back in what was it, the early 2000s, when Spoiler was killed off before she came back and became a Batgirl. It feels like a classic Gotham war on crime gang war storyline, which is very, very exciting and not something we've had for a while, because the Bat books have been tied up with Bruce traveling the multiverse. DC as a whole line has been trapped in Night Terrors for the last 2 months, so it feels cool to go street level at this point, and so I'm very excited to see where it goes. I'm not going to say anything more because I don't want to spoil it, as it's literally only just hit stores as you're watching this podcast or listening to this podcast now. So that is Batman, Catwoman, The Gotham War, Battle Lines, available now on digital and in comic book stores. So please, please do go out and read it. Now, another comic book that I want to talk to you about, which I am very, very excited about. I'm sticking with Bat books. I'm sorry. You should know me by now. I am very much a Batman fan. So sticking with another Bat book. This one is releasing, again, in comic book stores and on digital platforms on the 12th of September. This is... Oh my God, I can't believe this is finally coming out. This is Batman, Gargoyle of Gotham, written and drawn by the wonderful Raphael Grampa, who you can listen to my interview with him in one of our San Diego Comic-Con episodes, or you can check out the interview with him over on YouTube. Just search Get Your Comic-Con on YouTube. This is his new Black Label Bat series, written and drawn by him, colours by Mateus Lopez, letters by John Workman, cover art by Raphael Grampa as well. It's absolutely magnificent. I have finally read the full first issue. I had an Ashcan edition, which I was given at San Diego Comic Con, but I now have the full first issue. Sorry, Oliver was trying to push my microphone. I now have the full first issue, and it's just amazing. It's so individual and unique and different, but it's so also rooted in Bat Family at the same time. So it's embargoed until publication, so I really, really can't say too much. So what I want to do is just preview some of what you're going to get in this book. This is a Batman, rather than a Bruce Wayne, who is incredibly dedicated to his mission. As Raphael has talked about in interviews and ahead of its release, he is a version of the character who is going to kill off his Bruce Wayne identity altogether for the very reason of dedicating himself to that mission. Bruce Wayne is just a means to an end that he no longer needs. And so this version is going to kill it off and dedicate himself fully to his Bat persona and his search for justice. And that is going to put him in the line of fire with a truly creepy new villain who is making their debut in this book. And it's, again, I need to be really careful because I don't want to spoil it, but I'm just scrolling through the pages now, as you can tell if you're watching this on YouTube, and it's the villain is truly monstrous. This version of Batman is also very monstrous and very imposing. But what Raphael is doing, and he did talk to me about this in his interview, is he is building his own version of Gotham, his own world, his own design language. And now, having seen the book from start to finish, that is so true. There is no embellishment in what he is saying there. It is beautiful. The colours are outstanding. The story is amazing. And that is literally all I'm allowed to say at this point, because it is embargoed until publication, which is on the 12th of September. But I just wanted to point you in this direction. You can see some preview art now online. But that is Batman, Gargoyle of Gotham, number one, book one, hitting comic book stores and digital platforms on September the 12th. I will cover it some more when we get to that episode of the podcast and I can finally talk about it a bit more and dive into it. But please, 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 if you are looking for a unique and just stunning version of a new Batman story, then please do check it out when it is available. As I just said, September the 12th. I can't say it enough. Gargoyle of Gotham, Batman, Raphael Grampa, 12th of September. Mark your calendars, pre-order now. Please go get it because it's wonderful. I will rush out and buy that one physically as well because I just want to own a copy of the stunning artwork. I will be back with more comic book stories over the coming weeks. I'm looking at different series from different publishers that I want to talk to you about. And we're going to be reviewing new books regularly as well, because I really want to tell you more about what it is that I'm reading and what it is that I want to recommend you that you should be running out and reading as well. But if you've got books that you would like to recommend for me to read as well that I maybe have not picked up or not had a chance to because I'm just so busy reading everything else, as you can tell from what's behind me on the mess of the shelves, then please do find me and get in touch on social media. You can find me on all major platforms as @NeilVag. I'm on Twitter, Threads, Instagram, Blue Sky, all of those. Just search me by name and you'll be able to find me. But that's it for this episode. Thank you for tuning in to episode 101 of the Get Your Comic On podcast. As you can tell, playing a little with formula. Might change a little bit more over the coming weeks, but it's really exciting to be past that 100th episode milestone and here to share more of my geekness with you all. Next week, you'll have a brand new episode of the Consistently Okay podcast with Nick and Luke as they dive in on episode 2 of season 1 of Daredevil. Really enjoying their deep dive into this show, particularly now it's finding new life on Disney Plus and preparing for Daredevil Born Again. Nearly forgot the title, which will be debuting on Disney Plus, hopefully in the next year or so. But until next time, stay safe, stay well, stay geeky, and I will see you very soon. Bye!